We have incredible leaders in the military, and we have incredible military.
A large U.S. bomb has impact in many parts of the world. It's Friday, April 14th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online as well, on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, President Trump sees relations with China evolving. South Korea trade with the United States under review. China will pay big to identify spies, improving refugee health. It all comes your way right now on VOA Asia. A U.S. warplane dropped the largest bomb in America's non-nuclear arsenal on an Islamic State bunker complex in northeastern Afghanistan. It has implications not only in the fight against Islamic State, but for other potential aggressors in the world. VOA senior White House correspondent Pete Heinlein joins us with more from the White House.
It's undoubtedly a bomb that has the capability to do huge damage. It's called a GBU-43. And it's never been used in combat before. It's about 22,000 pounds. And it was dropped in Nangarhar province in a place where ISIS is known to have an underground base. They use a lot of tunnels and caves, and this bomb is designed to have maximum effect on that.
It sends a message to the terror group.
Yes, and interestingly, it comes just days after the first American soldier was killed in Afghanistan this year. An American Special Forces soldier died in Nangarhar province several days ago. President Trump was asked earlier at an event for first responders whether this was something he had ordered, and he said, in effect, that the military has carte blanche to do things like this. They have He gives general orders, and they decide exactly what they want to do.
This follows a strike on a Syrian airfield using multiple missiles.
59 Tomahawk-guided missiles in that attack, which did quite a bit of damage to the Syrian Air Force, although pictures showed that it didn't damage the airstrip and some of the other facilities. The Tomahawk weapons, these Tomahawk missiles, are so precise that they can hit airplanes without damaging the runway.
But it comes against the backdrop as we're sending an armada off the waters of North Korea to send a message to Pyongyang.
Everybody's keeping their eyes on the Korean Peninsula over the next couple days. Coming up is an anniversary of the birth of the first Kim Il-sung, and the North Koreans have a tradition of setting off military displays on that day. There's concern that they may, in this case, set off a nuclear device, and if so, that could trigger some kind of a response.
And we have seen some reports indicating that they indeed have moved some sort of a device into an area where they have conducted previous nuclear tests. So we'll have to keep an eye on that and what the U.S. response might be.
Well, the U.S. response is we're keeping a very close eye on it so far. They're very circumspect at the Defense Department and here at the National Security Council, but they do have everything in place, including National Security Council sources are telling us the USS Ohio, a submarine that has some advanced submarine-launched Tomahawk missiles itself. So everybody's standing by with bated breath to see what the North Koreans do, because the U.S. military has shown itself over the past several days to be much more active than it has been in response to things like this over the past many years.
With regards to North Korea, President Trump has spoken twice with President Xi Jinping of China, once when they were meeting at Mar-a-Lago, and then again in a phone call recently. Mr. Trump has indicated that he's willing to go it alone to, quote, take care of the North Korean situation.
Yes, but he and President Xi seem to have reached agreement on a number of things, and among them is a deal that's becoming more and more clear each day by which President Trump is going to work with President Xi to make sure the Chinese economy is strong in advance of the big party Congress this fall. And in exchange, President Xi will put pressure on the North Korean government and possibly might be willing to look the other way if the United States does something in response for an aggressive North Korean action.
A lot going on, and senior White House correspondent Pete Heinlein is keeping tabs on all of it at the White House. Pete, thanks so much for joining us.
Nice to talk to you, Jim.
These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. China offers big rewards for tips on foreign spies. Trump and Xi converge on currency in Syria as U.S.-China ties warm. South Korea expecting tough trade talks with Trump. New Zealanders evacuated from parts of coast as storm hits. Kim Jong-un opens complex of North Korean high-rise apartments. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are found on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. President Donald Trump, in a sign of warming relations with China, said he believes President Xi Jinping wants to, quote, do the right thing about North Korea's nuclear and missile threat. Speaking alongside NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg and fresh from a two-day summit with Mr. Xi Jinping, unlike Russia's President Vladimir Putin, Mr. Trump says he's gotten to know the Chinese leader.
President Xi wants to do the right thing. We had a very good bonding. I think we had a very good chemistry together. I think he wants to help us with North Korea. We talk trade. We talk a lot of things. And I said, the way you're going to make a good trade deal is to help us with North Korea. Otherwise, we're just going to go it alone. That'll be all right, too. But going it alone means going it with lots of other nations. But I was very impressed with President Xi. And I think he means well, and I think he wants to help. We'll see whether or not he does.
Earlier, Mr. Trump told the Wall Street Journal that, unlike his previous campaign statements, he does not think China is a currency manipulator. The Center for Strategic and International Studies China expert Bonnie Glazer tells VOA's Victor Beatty the very positive summit in Florida between the two leaders appears to be yielding results.
I think that from President Trump's perspective, they had a very direct and in-depth exchange of views on the core problems in the relationship, the priorities, particularly for the United States, those being North Korea and the trade and economic relationship. And President Trump believes that we've laid some groundwork for future progress. And I think it was quite interesting that in the UN Security Council, that China abstained on a vote against Syria condemning the Assad regime for the use of chemical weapons against civilians, while Russia vetoed the UN Security Council resolution. Now, as we know, China and Russia have vetoed together the last six resolutions. And so this perhaps provides some evidence that President Trump had some connection with Xi Jinping and that maybe China will be able to share some objectives with the United States and maybe work together going forward.
In the wake of the two-day summit they had at Mar-a-Lago in Florida, Mr. Trump Wednesday indicated that they have a good bonding, a good relationship, good chemistry together. That's the word he used. What does that mean? Are you surprised by that?
Well, I don't know whether chemistry is the most important thing in the relationship. I think what's important is a conversation about interests and how our two governments are going to work together. And I think particularly on the issue of North Korea, they had a very in-depth discussion about the threats posed by North Korea's missiles and nuclear weapons programs and the need to take some drastic steps to stop further progress. And I think that President Trump believes that Xi Jinping understands the urgency of this issue. And in fact, just 24 hours ago, President Trump followed up with a phone call to Xi Jinping to talk more about North Korea. So the real question, of course, is what kind of progress we're going to see, what actions China will take, whether China's policy of prioritizing the preservation of stability in North Korea over the process of putting pressure on it to denuclearize will be changed.
Bonnie Glaser is also looking as to whether Beijing will tighten compliance with all UN Security Council sanctions on Pyongyang, perhaps shutting down banks and front companies that enable the North to access the global financial system. She said a motivating factor may be Mr. Trump's warning the U.S. will go it alone without Chinese cooperation to end the North Korean nuclear threat, including secondary sanctions targeting those same Chinese banks and companies. Happening now in Asia, North Korea appears to have placed a device at its nuclear test site. According to 38 North, satellite imagery showed continued activity around the North Portal and new activity in the main administrative area. It's a rapidly developing story. Stay up to date with it on VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always happy to have you with us on VOA Asia. South Korea is expecting some tough trade talks ahead with the United States after President Donald Trump strongly criticized the free trade agreement between the two countries for dramatically increasing the U.S. trade deficit. A report by the United States laid out key trade objectives for the Trump administration that include breaking down unfair trade barriers and ensuring American businesses have a fair opportunity to compete. It specifically points to South Korea, along with China and the North American Free Trade Agreement, as egregious examples of unbalanced and unfair trade. The South Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement was the largest trade deal implemented during the administration of former President Barack Obama. Since it took effect in 2012, the U.S. trade deficit with South Korea has more than doubled. Jeffrey Jones is an international trade attorney with the law firm Kim & Chung, speaking at a recent Korea International Trade Association forum.
Those are harsh words, and that is the economic and political reality that we have to deal with.
Business leaders and some former trade officials in Seoul have voiced concern that the Trump administration is being overly critical of the South Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement by putting too much emphasis on the trade deficit that is just one aspect of a complex and evolving economic relationship. For example, they say Korean investment in the United States has created more than 45,000 American jobs. Jones notes that last year's $23 billion South Korea trade deficit with the United States is relatively small in comparison with the deficit with Japan that's five times higher, China 10 times as large. Kim Jong-un, the former director of the South Korean Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade, who was a key trade negotiator during the South Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement talks, said his country made major concessions in years of tough negotiations.
Everybody knows that Korea's tariff was much higher, you know, than that those of U.S. So when we talk about reduction, then Korea had a deeper cut, deeper cut than U.S. did.
Wendy Cutler, the former U.S. Trade Representative Chief of the South Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement, is now Vice President of the Asia Society Policy Institute. She says the trade agreement also provided a framework to resolve disputes that were undermining trust and cooperation in other areas of the U.S.-South Korea alliance.
In our bilateral relationship, it was often the economic issues which were really the source of tension. And so once we were able to conclude CORUS, we found that our overall alliance became stronger.
Business leaders with the American Chamber of Commerce in Korea say the five-year-old agreement is in need of upgrading. Our thanks to VOA's Brian Patton in Seoul and Yoomi Kim for bringing us this report. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
KoreasTerrorist.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The two women charged with the killing of Kim Jong-nam, the estranged half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, appeared in a Malaysian court. Their lawyers fear the case may be compromised after three North Koreans were permitted to leave the country with Kim's body. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. This is VOA Asia. We thank you so much for joining us today. Authorities in China are offering big monetary rewards to people who provide information about foreign spies. Officials are highlighting the seriousness of the situation, with some saying there's a need to protect national secrets. Others are poking fun at the campaign, which state media are promoting on social media and through a playful cartoon video just days ahead of National Security Education Day. In the video, spies, secret agents, and bad guys are depicted as a colorful combination of Western pop culture characters. The video promotion explains, quote, informers who play a key role in helping prevent or detect major espionage cases can receive awards between $15 and more than $73,000. As long as the cases are verified and accurate, informers will be rewarded. In promoting the campaign, examples of spying provided by authorities include stealing or buying state secrets, pointing out targets for enemies, and attempting to turn state employees traitor. VOA went out onto the streets of Beijing, where none of the residents interviewed saw a need for the reward offer. Some said it was the duty of citizens to report suspicious behavior, while others doubted the ability of ordinary people to discover spying. One man, surnamed Zhao, who works in legal affairs, said that while the reward was quite large, intelligence authorities were better suited for the work. He says, "We really don't know the exact circumstances or why spies would come to China. Everyday citizens really have no idea about such things, such inside stories. That's the sort of thing that comes through the investigations of national security departments and other relevant agencies." We also spoke with an elderly pharmacist, surnamed Chu, who said spies are not ordinary types. "If you don't understand what's going on behind the scenes, how could you?" she asked. "But in general, we've all never had any contact with this kind of people, that kind of international stuff." We spoke with another man, surnamed Zhang, who works in the travel industry, who said people need more awareness about national security. "There are a lot of spies now in China. China is developing very fast, and the West is on the decline. The East is rising, so spying activities are quite normal." Others pointed to more pressing concerns, like the difficulties of buying a home. This woman, surnamed Xi, works in finance. "Most people are more concerned about the basic necessities of life: transportation, housing prices, salaries, air quality, whether pollution is severe or not. These are the kinds of things everyday common citizens pay attention to." Of course, there were comments on social media, with many calling instead for more focus on corrupt officials. The measures come against a backdrop of Beijing's increasingly active campaign against hostile foreign forces. It also comes as China prepares to mark its second National Security Education Day, which is tomorrow, April 15th. VOA's Bill Ide in Beijing contributed to this story. Developing at this hour in Asia, Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte has canceled a planned visit to an island Manila claims in the disputed South China Sea after Beijing warned him against the visit. Duterte said that because he values China's friendship, he won't travel to the island on the June 12th Independence Day holiday. VOA Asia keeps you informed all day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now in our program, as we continue to witness the plight of many people displaced in parts of Asia, refugees can often suffer from years of poor or non-existent medical care. Should they reach other countries to escape violent or repressive societies, they bring with them special needs. Seeking medical help in a new country where they have language, social, and cultural barriers is a challenge. VOA's Carol Pearson tells us in the story written by June So about doctors in small town Charlottesville, Virginia, who are dedicated to refugees in their quest to become healthy and self-sufficient members of the community.
Vimal Chatri gets a regular checkup in the International Family Medicine Clinic in Charlottesville. Last year, he had a kidney transplant at the University of Virginia Hospital, which the clinic is part of.
I would have been dead by now because I didn't have the resources to go for the dialysis or kidney transplant in the refugee camp.
Chatri spent 20 years in a refugee camp in Nepal after he fled Bhutan, where he was born.
I was among those who fled, and among those 110,000 people who had to leave the country out of the fear of persecutions.
Lubna Abbas suffered a spinal disc problem when she came from Iraq 6 years ago.
With my disc, I can't walk. Now I can walk, I can work. I work 2 part-time jobs. Are we grateful from her, from the clinic, from everything in the United States?
Chatri and Abbas are among the more than 3,000 refugees that have resettled in Charlottesville through the International Refugee Committee, or IRC, since 1998. Most of them have received health care at the clinic that provides one-stop service for them. Family medicine doctor Fern Hauk at UVA created it 15 years ago with collaboration with IRC and the health department.
Refugees mostly have not had very good health care before they arrived. So when they come, they have many problems, often both medical and psychological. We need to understand their problems. We need to be aware of their cultural background and their beliefs and their prior experiences. So I felt that that could be best done in one setting, in our clinic, where then I could train other doctors, our nursing staff, all to have a much more comprehensive approach to the refugees.
On the initial visit, the doctors use an in-person interpreter and allow a full-hour consultation for better understanding. The clinic also provides the interpreter service by phone for follow-up visits. But diagnosis and treatment are just a small part of what the doctors do for the refugees. Patients with physical pain are relatively easy to care for, but patients with ailments they have yet to feel, like hypertension or preventive treatments, aren't.
A lot of the women, for instance, have never had a mammogram, have never had a pap smear, so we are explaining these tests. Why do we do them here? Why do we recommend them? So we do also a lot of patient education.
Even more difficult are mental health issues like post-traumatic stress disorder and clinical depression many refugees have sustained.
You can imagine if someone has been in a country in the midst of war and seen a family member killed in front of them and maybe threatened themselves and had to flee, they've gone through trauma. So they may be having nightmares, they may be having flashbacks, they may be having intrusive thoughts. They won't thrive here if they don't get appropriate treatment.
While providing refugees with physical and mental health care is challenging, the doctors say it's gratifying.
Our goal is to have healthy and productive members of our community and have them feel welcomed and integrated and satisfied with their lives and happy to contribute to our community.
For producer June So, I'm Carol Pearson, VOA News, Charlottesville, Virginia.
It's that time of the year again in Southeast Asia. Many of you are celebrating a new year. It's the water festival time, a lot of water being playfully thrown around in many parts of the region. We hope you're enjoying the celebrations in Burma, Thailand, and Cambodia. And for all of you who are listening to us, we thank you so much for joining us on our program. So many ways to listen to VOA Asia. You can catch us on iTunes. Get our program from SoundCloud. You can download our podcast at voanews.com, or you can also stream our program on Facebook at VOA Asia. If you're in Myanmar, we're on VOA Burmese. We thank everybody there for listening. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Dave Magnus. Our managing editor is Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team includes Steve Miller and Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day.